This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, August 1st, 2019. I'm Caleb Brown. What qualifies someone to be the Director of National Intelligence, and what are the costs of filling that office with not someone with decades of experience in intelligence, but instead a fierce partisan and a loyalist to the president? Representative John Ratcliffe appears to fit that bill. Cato's Julian Sanchez discusses the important and subtle ways a DNI can drive policy. Who's had this job even just in this administration?
So when you look at the history of this office, Representative Ratcliffe certainly sticks out as someone with by far the thinnest resume of the batch, at least, you know, relevant to intelligence work. Currently, we've got Dan Coats, a former senator who served for many years on the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, had before that been ambassador to Germany, had before that been in Congress for many years. He was arguably maybe the one with the least relevant experience to that point, but someone with a long history in both intelligence oversight and diplomacy. We had James Clapper, certainly not someone I'm, you know, a fan of on a number of levels. He, I think, really diminished his office when he misled Congress about the existence of a bulk metadata collection program. But if you look at his fitness for the job in terms of experience, he certainly had it. Decades of service to the intelligence community, including directing the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and the Defense Intelligence Agency. I don't think anyone could question his qualifications, again, as a matter of experience. Dennis Blair, four-star Navy admiral who had worked in some intelligence roles during his long career with the military. You know, unsurprisingly, the statute that creates the office suggests that the Director of National Intelligence or his deputy should have some kind of substantial training and experience in either the military or intelligence work. And if you look at Representative Ratcliffe, it's just sort of night and day when you compare. This is someone who was a small town mayor in Texas for many years, served in, now serving in Congress since 2015. And really his only relevant intelligence background is sitting on the House Intelligence Committee, and he's only been doing that for 7 months. So, you know, when you compare sort of the background and the resumes there, this really does feel like sort of elevating someone from the mailroom to CEO. I think it's, you know, potentially a healthy thing to have a DNI, at least sometimes, who is has a background in intelligence and experience with intelligence that comes from outside the community, maybe in some oversight capacity or some other you know, even scholarly capacity. But it's hard to imagine that but for his sort of vigorous attacks on the Mueller investigation and the Russia probe, Ratcliffe is someone who would ever be on anyone's list for consideration for this role.
Describe what the job is. The DNI is a very important job. They meet with the president regularly. What is the substance of the job in terms of overseeing these intelligence agencies?
Sure. So the Director of National Intelligence is a position that was really created in 2005 on the recommendation of the 9/11 Commission, which suggested that we might have been better prepared for the terror attacks of 9/11 had we had a sort of central clearinghouse, a coordinating entity to ensure information was flowing appropriately between the 16 different components of the intelligence community. Right, you have a lot of different cooks at the pot there, and so getting them to work together, the 9/11 Commission said was an important reform. And so, really, the ODNI, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, is primarily about coordinating and synthesizing the efforts of the other 16 intelligence agencies or, you know, agencies with intelligence components. And so, the DNI is in charge of the president's daily briefing, and so, in a way, is the most sort of direct point person in terms of being in contact with and advising and briefing the president on intelligence issues is the statutory sort of intelligence advisor to the National Security Council, also has sort of budgetary and some personnel authority over various of the other intelligence agency components. So he can, to some extent, control the flow of congressionally appropriated funds and transfer personnel between agencies as he deems necessary. But it's really a sort of synthetic role. There's about 1,500 staff under the DNI, and a lot of that is various kinds of, again, sort of synthetic or coordinating entities like the Cyber Threat Intelligence Integration Center or the National Counterterrorism Center. Really, the DNI is about being a central clearinghouse, but it's worth noting that despite the authority over the flow of appropriated funds and in some cases approval over major acquisitions by some of the agencies, this isn't someone with direct authority over the other agencies. That is, he can't directly order, someone at CIA or NSA to do something in general, as a matter of sort of direct authority. And so this is a role that to some extent, though he does have some real teeth and some real authority, also substantially requires cooperation and, therefore respect from the other agencies.
So with respect to that, if you say that these other agencies do not report to the Director of National Intelligence, how important is it then if it's a job that where this guy can't extract what he wants directly from agencies when he wants it? Is it a big concern, or why should we be concerned if this person isn't necessarily as qualified as people who've had this job in the past?
Well, so I think one issue is just that, again, this is a role that to some extent, again, he's got some levers to exert power, but requires, in a sense, the willing participation and cooperation of the other agencies. And honestly, that would be true almost regardless of the formal authorities, in part because, a previous DNI, James Clapper, testified before Congress, I think during his confirmation hearings, that the only entity with visibility on all special access programs, all the different balls the intelligence community has in the air, is God. It's so vast and so complex that even if you can sort of formally order anyone to do anything, you really sort of need the willing, voluntary cooperation of the various agency heads and components to be properly apprised of what's going on. And again, there's staff to help with that, but this is the kind of thing where, unless he's sort of running to the president on a daily basis, it matters whether this is a role that's held by someone who is held in esteem and seen as trustworthy and competent.
So what are the risks then of intelligence agencies that are supposed to work with the Director of National Intelligence not having particularly high regard for whoever's in that post?
Well, I think just it naturally will make that person less effective. You might see a hesitancy about sharing certain things, especially if there are doubts about what his sort of intentions or function in that role are. Like, the two sort of main issues with Representative Ratcliffe are that he doesn't really have anything like the experience you would expect for someone who's essentially the head of the intelligence community to have. And second, that his actual qualification for the role seems to be his attacks on the Russia probe and the Mueller investigation, and what he sees as malfeasance by some of the intelligence agencies related to the Trump campaign and Russian interference. And those two problems sort of feed into each other. To the extent he doesn't have the stature to kind of command respect by dint of his own experience, he is naturally going to be much, even more dependent on the authority of the president, on the perception that he's got the support and ear of the president, so that you know, whatever he can't do directly, the president will order. But that in turn means he has a lot less flexibility, I think, to sort of tell the president things he doesn't want to hear, or say, no, I don't think we can do that, that's not appropriate. You know, one of the reasons it's sort of widely believed that DNI Coates and Donald Trump ended up having a sort of strained relationship is that Coates would often say things that would either contradict what Trump was saying, or were in various ways politically inconvenient. So he would publicly say, in fact, we still see North Korea as a threat, pursuing nuclear weapons capabilities, when President Trump was trying to tout his great progress in diplomatic outreach. He repeatedly confirmed the intelligence community's unanimous verdict that Russia had, one, interfered in the election, and two, done so at least in part with the goal of assisting then-candidate Trump. Trump has, both during the campaign and in his role as president, vacillated between sort of grudgingly conceding that that was the case and casting doubt on it, and you know, raising questions about, well, you know, where are the DNC servers, and maybe it was an inside job. Obviously, Trump did not particularly care to be to have, you know, the DNI or the intelligence community saying things that were true but inconvenient at inconvenient times for him. And so, you know, having someone in that role who is more dependent on the president because they lack independent stature, especially when, in a sense, they're being picked in the first place because of their willingness to mount attacks essentially on the intelligence community that fit the president's narrative, makes for, I think, a tense situation going forward. I think you're going to have other elements regarding him with a certain amount of suspicion. You're going to have him leaning on the White House essentially to get things done and to try and assert his authority, which in turn is going to make him, assuming he's confirmed, maybe much less free to do things that antagonize the president, or at least, you know, that contradict what the president would like to hear, which is, in a sense, the job of a DNI and of the intelligence community more generally. You know, in justifying why he continues to call into question this, you know, pretty much unanimous verdict of Russian electoral interference, he sometimes points to the war in Iraq, the intelligence suggesting that Saddam Hussein was pursuing weapons of mass destruction. And of course, that is a case where the intelligence community got things wrong. But I think the record shows that that was really, in substantial part, a problem of politicization of intelligence, of sort of stovepiping of intelligence that confirmed what the sort of political bodies wanted to hear. There was a political decision made for a variety of reasons that it would be desirable to go into Iraq. There was a certain level of conviction that they were, in fact, pursuing weapons of mass destruction. And so, you know, internal doubts were sort of suppressed, and intelligence confirming that view that they wanted to have confirmed funneled up. And so it's, in a way, ironic that this is an example Trump should seize on, because that is a really quite grim illustration of the dangers of intelligence that is shaped by what the White House or any other political oversight body would like to be true, or finds it politically congenial to be true. And I don't know if it's a permanent risk in intelligence. The Scylla and the Charybdis, right, of intelligence have always been too much politicization and insufficient, in a sense, political control, right? The risk on the one hand is that the agencies are not really effectively subject to the command of the civilian authorities, that they end up developing their own agendas and pursuing them sort of irrespective of what their nominal political superiors want. And then, of course, the flip side, too much politicization, too much ginning up whatever those above them would like to hear rather than telling inconvenient truths. And I think, in this instance, we have a kind of perfect storm set up for an intelligence community that is, in a way, not doing its core job because it is being run by someone whose really only qualification for the job is saying things the president found politically congenial.
Julian Sanchez is a senior fellow at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.